And she also always tell me, I'm giving you what my father didn't give me. I'm treating you like your brothers. Which is true, by the way. She did treat me like my brothers. But there's a very thin line of that. You know, there's like a little bit of hypocrisy, because then when it comes to sexuality and what I can do as a woman, no. We will not treat you as a man there.
Je luistert naar Let's Talk, een podcast waarin de gesprekstof bestaat uit impactvolle initiatieven, strafondersteuningsaanbod en participatie als katalysator voor innovatie. Uw host is Bart Wuits, CEO van de groep Blenders & Web, de incubator van inclusieve werkvloeren en innovatieve strategieën rond onder andere ondernemerschap, duurzaamheid en toeleiding naar werk. Our guest on this episode is Yara Al-Adib, who has been residing in Belgium for the past 8 years. Yara was born in Syria and has also studied in Lebanon and Italy. She is a trained designer and is well known for her initiative called From Syria with Love, a catering service that empowers women and challenges mainstream views on Syrian culture. We catch up with Yara during a momentous time in her life as she transitions from being a goal-oriented planner to someone who is led by her heart and passions. Get ready for an energetic conversation as we delve into what makes Yara such a strong believer in empowerment and who inspires and empowers her.
I'm on a sabbatical now. I'm not working for the past 3 months. Really sitting.
This is really a new person.
Yeah, it's an extreme. I go to extreme so I can get to the center. I'm taking now like three months now already off. And it's really hard for me not to do something. But I'm getting used to it now. And it's really nice to just let things sink and process everything that's happened. Like, we're always also just too much doing. And this has helped me a lot. And now I'm reconsidering everything. Actually, I mean, like, From Syria with Love has been going on for such a long time. And I thought to myself, actually, it's ending soon, From Syria with Love.
Really ending?
Yeah.
Or it's ending for you?
Well, ending, I mean, From Syria with Love is me. Without me, there is no... unfortunately, that's one of the pitfalls of the project. Because I'm like the generator. And if I'm not there, then it's gone.
Can you explain to me in just two sentences or three what Syria with Love consists of?
So From Syria with Love is started as a dream to bring about an idea of bringing a new perspective to Syria other than the refugee crisis and the end. Uh-huh. And so we do it through food. So we tell stories of Syria through our food. And it's purely a project of women being empowered, especially housewives being empowered. And it worked, I think. It did the message. It got the message across, yeah.
Women being empowered, you were looking to a specific group of women?
Well, I actually not, but I attracted that kind of group of women somehow. I mean, I was focusing more on women who had worked in the past.
Yeah.
But somehow I just ended up with housewives because probably maybe deep down inside, I knew these were the most difficult to find a job in the society because, I mean, they have no professional background. Mm-hmm. And I did actually attract back then 4 housewives who were all chefs by nature, which is very typical Syrian. Mm-hmm. I even asked, you know, about their chef techniques. I just asked, do you want to work? And I had 2 who already worked.
They were Syrian.
Yeah, all 4 of them. Yeah. And then at a certain moment, an Iraqi woman joined us. 2 of whom who had worked as teachers, like kindergarten teachers, but like very small amounts of hours.
Yeah.
And the other 2 had been housewives for all their lives.
What did he do with them? If you look to them now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they're very different people. When I first met them now, 2017, yeah, they were very powerless women. They were lost. They felt so displaced, so also worthless because they couldn't find their meaning anymore, like besides being a mom and a wife. And having them a purpose, giving them a purpose, helped them find again their ground and their self-esteem. And I saw it growing throughout the years. At the beginning, when I used to tell them, we have an event for 20, they would be panicking. Mm-hmm. Now, when I say we have an event for 200, They got used to it.
Okay, yeah. Just do it.
Yeah, we do it. Yeah, no questions. Yeah.
But you say, you just said that you will stop.
Yeah.
Or you have stopped or you will stop.
Will stop.
Yeah. What will happen to them? Did they find another job already or not interested to do that? Or?
So basically, first, my intention from Syria with Love was to make like this kind of platform for these women to... not for me to be solely always the driving force in this project. And like I said, I ended up with housewives who have no digital skills, no professional skills, no language skills. And at a certain moment, I started putting them in the forefront, like to sell.
Yep.
But it was really not for them. And I looked throughout these years for someone to take my place. I also couldn't find someone to take my place. Mm. And there was a moment, it was actually after Corona that kind of hit me. I'm like, in a way, if I leave, this goes, it collapses. And it made me so sad, but it is what it is. So I had two choices, either to stay or to leave. And to do the half-half was just like physically impossible, you know? Because, okay, From Syria with Love is not a full-time job, but then I would be teaching in Thomas More, doing my courses as a graphic design professor. And then on the weekends, I would be catering. Okay, I don't mind that, but I had no more space for me. It was just doing too much, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's also because it's really connected to who you are. Let's make it rich because we dived into it. But who is Yara? What was your childhood dream? What's your ambition? Like, who are you?
It's a good question. And that's what I've been working on actually since Corona. I've been doing a lot of like deep dive into my soul, into like this, who am I really, you know? I did grow up in a very Middle Eastern background of like, you need a degree because that's how you thrive in this world. You need to constantly be doing the best of the best because that's how you stand out. So there was a lot of course, unconscious peer pressure, family pressure.
Okay.
And that's what my parents did. They invested their money and their energy on our education. Which was amazing, but it came with a lot of course, consequences that you realize when you're 30 and you're like, who am I without my job? Who am I without From Syria with Love? So now going into therapy and movement, I realize I'm still someone who empowers people. That is still part of who I am, you know? Still a businesswoman who loves to create and to bring things together but I'm still on the that part, but the achieving part of me has dimmed a bit. It's now more the being. Being is like, who are you truly like? And I believe now more and more that we all have treasures inside of us. They're all buried with our ego and our limited beliefs and our brainwashed way of living. That now I'm digging to find my true purpose, but I am very close to finding it. I still feel again, it's really, again, about women for some weird reason, maybe because I'm a woman, but also, again, with migrant backgrounds, because I feel that we have, in the Middle East, we have been tamed and shut down for so many decades that I cannot handle that bullshit anymore. It's truly in my body where I, you know, in these movement therapy movements and like exploration, so much anger would come out and I would be like, where is this anger coming from? It was all from suppression, you know. Ever since I was a kid, I always had this resistance, I guess, being put in a box. I always hated it. My mom would always say, you're a rebel, you don't like to follow the rules. And it's very true, especially when I don't believe the rules are kind of convincing or like, wow.
Productive.
Yeah, why would I have to do it? Yeah, because we say so or because the society says so.
Yeah.
And so throughout these 4 years, I was challenging all this, like, why do we have to do this? And why? We had no choice. We were born Muslim. We had to follow the certain way of things and we should keep our mouth shut and just move on. So now I feel what all the women feel. And I want to give them a platform where they can scream and release and express also not just their anger, but their femininity. And this is something I also lost when I was doing From Syria with Love. The doing, this masculine energy, right. I am very good at it, but I'm so good at it that it's kept me going for so long that I have dimmed my femininity, you know? The femininity is the surrendering, is the being, is the softness.
But now my quest is to find the balance. I do believe that a lot of women lack masculine energy, and that's the energy of manifesting things, because a lot of women are more in their hearts and in their emotions and not in the practical sense, and which I think we all need as women. And we need the other part, the nourishing, loving part that helps connect people. But it's more accepting what is, because I also have, you know, from childhood, again, we all have our rhythms and our patterns. And I have the pattern of saving people.
That's interesting.
So I am a savior, you know. Ever since I was a kid, I was always like the one that would be in between people fixing problems. And I came here and I worked for a year and I'm like, oh, fuck this job. I want to help. I cannot just do things like the computer. It doesn't give me this fulfillment. And I realized also that I was always, every time I see an issue or a problem or a challenge, I always run to fix it. And now I'm in this place of like, let it be. Maybe it's meant to be there, you know? Because if I'm saving you all the time, then you'll never find the ways to save yourself.
Very interesting. You say a lot of very valuable things. Now, we are in a project where we are focusing on employment of women,
yes,
and especially women with migrant backgrounds, yeah, also longer educated.
Yes.
Still, we see in Flanders that there is apparently some amount of hurdles, bottlenecks, that prevents them from participating to their full potential in the labor market. Why is that? And what needs to be done?
I like the question. Well, it's very specific about women, Middle Eastern women. And first of all, we're not raised in the Middle East to become employed women. It's always a plus. It's never a default. The on contrary for a man. You know, if you want to, you want to study, it's always a plus. Of course, it depends where you come from and your social status and blah, 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 but it's always an extra, yep, you know? So women have not been trained or have not been pushed to their potential there. And I see a lot of women actually in the Middle East who are very book smart and like very intelligent women, mm-hmm, who fight for their education. I've seen it, you know? But then they come to this real world and they're just like not even seen as women. Again, because they're second class, you know? If you apply for a job, they'll take the man.
And now you're talking about the Middle East culture.
Most of the Middle East, yes.
And not the employment here.
No, for instance. But if they come, they will never think otherwise. So they come to Belgium and they...
The paradigm they're starting from.
Yeah, I'm still the minority. I'm still the second class. I'm still not capable. I don't have enough. So there's a lot of lack mindset coming. Lack and not enough and... a lot of like lack of self-worth.
Self-limiting belief, we call it.
Yeah. Definitely. And there's so many kinds of personas of how different women in the Middle East like direct themselves. I am not the most typical because I also was raised outside of the Middle East for quite some time. So I left home when I was 17. So I kind of explored, but I still felt that I had my limitations. You know, I still felt my parents still were my mentor, monitor, like, yeah, you can go, we're free, but we still have limits, you know? And
it's a feeling that you carry from generations before you.
Yeah, for sure. So either you have the limiting belief that you're not enough,
okay,
so that already blocks you from the beginning,
yeah,
or you've gone through some sort of experience in the past and you've been like shut down or like tamed, and then you're like, yeah, what should I try anyway? And I remember when I was born, I'm the only girl in between two boys. My mom has felt this lack. You know, she always felt that her father loved the boys more than the men, the woman. And she always was trying her utter best to be seen. So she took the trajectory of, I'm going to do everything as my father likes it so I can be seen. And I see it. I see how she raised me. And she has this, you know, high standard, ultimate high expectations. And she passed it on to me. And she also always tell me,
I'm giving you what my father didn't give me. I'm treating you like your brothers. Which is true, by the way. She did treat me like my brothers. But there's a very thin line of that. You know, there's like a little bit of hypocrisy, because then when it comes to sexuality and what I can do as a woman, no, we will not treat you as a man there.
Yeah, right.
It's a really very, I don't want to call it nasty, but a very complicated, web of what is expected and what is not. And it's not easy.
Would you say in a way that your mom empowered you, or who were your inspirations?
Role models, my mom, definitely. My mom, definitely. And I do see it sometimes in her, like when she sees me achieving, she feels she's achieving. Just not to say that's the right way of raising your child, but she does feel that my success is linked to her success. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Now, having said that, how can we help here in today's world, in this society, in this culture? We need you. We need you also in the labor market. It's as you mentioned yourself, it's an important way to get some fulfillment in your life.
Yeah, I think the question is how can people who have been living here for generations create the same safer and braver space that you create naturally?
Yeah, I think it's the safe space. That's the word. It's funny you say safe space, because my next project I'm calling already safe space. Because that's very important, to be safe and to feel safe enough to actually speak your utter truth and say what your true desire is. You know, because I know a lot of women who have huge dreams and they never dare to even share it with themselves, because, again, that feeling of, no way, what am I talking about? This is way bigger than me, you know? And I believe that creating the safe space comes with other women and women that they can relate to. Yeah. Again, I always feel like sometimes we are, as Arab women, very inspired by Western women. But we always feel that there is like, yeah, but she was raised differently, so she's different, you know? And I always at least feel when I see an Arab woman who's done a lot, I feel so powerful, like, whoa, you know, like I can relate. She comes from my background, you know? So to answer your question, I feel it's more this kind of these safe circles to talk about what their fear is, because it's all coming from fear. All these limitations are fear-based. So first relating to other women, but also letting them feel that it's okay to feel the fear, because there was a shame also around that.
It's almost a matter of collective trauma therapy.
Yeah, definitely. I really see it as that. And I see the work I'm doing now, I'm reflecting on my mom. And sometimes we have clashes like, where are you bringing these thoughts from? I would say, and then I'd be like, okay, no, compassion, okay? And I always say, meet her where she is, because yeah, I'm doing the hard work she didn't get to do. And I need to know where she comes from. And I see that clash also when I'm with Belgian women. Compared to all my Belgians, I'm always trying to prove myself. And at a certain moment, I'm like, why am I like that? It's because I want to be seen. It's because my mom said, you're going to be just like your brothers and even better. And I wanted to prove that.
Probably that's even the case with many Belgian women as well.
Of course.
With women overall.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I totally. But here, women definitely have more the freedom to just be whoever, you know? And freedom is not just freedom to do a business. It's freedom to just be you. You know, whether it's like me, I'm more of a masculine woman, or more of a soft woman, or even a gay woman. Like, nobody can just be themselves, you know? And so if you can't be yourself as a human, then how can you be anything else? Then it's just a mask.
Yeah, so creating the conditions to be able to ground.
Yeah, and to connect to their true selves. Like, what is your true desire? Let's talk about your dreams here.
And is that something you're aiming for now in your next challenge?
I would love to do that. I don't know how, but I want to also make it, I don't want to keep it fluffy and in the air. I want these women to to go out and like make it tangible. Sometimes I think I want to work with organizations. I thought of having a center, but I always think it's easier to not reinvent the wheel and go to places where there are already the women and already the need for these women to connect.
I for sure see you doing something like train the trainers for people like, for example, in organizations who employ women.
Yes.
To be able to create a safe space.
And
then women will be in their work bringing more their authentical self. And then it will be as if you have, for example, 10 new employees, but they are the same, but now they are bringing themselves to work.
Their true self.
Yeah,
definitely. Sometimes, when I got into this conscious world, I was really at awe of how unconscious we are and how unconsciously we do things.
Absolutely. And how did you get there?
Actually, I was in a difficult relationship and we were struggling a lot and I went to therapy. And from there, you know, it's a rabbit hole. Then you start wanting more and digging for more and... So I went into coaching. Yeah, coaching for me was the first step, actually. And then I heard things like the law of attraction. And I was like, yeah, I've heard of that stuff before, but what does it really mean, you know? Also very important of why people don't feel the creativity to come out. You need to feel safe. You need your basic needs met. If I'm having issues with my husband at home constantly, and I have this dream to create a business, this dream will die. Because I'm dealing with first-hand conflict constantly. Yeah. Or I have to find a job and I'm like pushed from the OCM way or from anyone. Where's creativity, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I can go into the topic of creativity. Creativity comes from sexual energy, from the energy of flowing and letting life go through you. Yeah, how do I get that if I'm not feeling safe? And something I also learned by doing From Sea With Love is it's really nice to do solo work, but it's the impact is nothing compared to when you come in a big community or group of people that have the same values and mindset. Then you quadruple the impact.
Can you share some of these insights you got with these four or how many, From Sea With Love?
I give you an example of Ahlan. She's one of the chefs who, for me, she's a super, super power engine horse, the dynamo.
Masculine.
Definitely. And she is illiterate. Okay. She was married when she was 15. She has been in a village, doesn't know anything about life, but her husband and her kids and her nothing. So she came, she did the typical trajet of all the refugees, came by boat, blah, blah, blah. And when I first met her, she was so happy that she first met a Syrian woman. And the first thing she told me is like, but you don't look Syrian. And I said, why? Yeah, because you're eating what the Belgians eat and you dress like the Belgians. And I laughed and I'm like, yeah, but of course she doesn't even come from the city. Surely comes from the village, you know? And she was one of the first that I actually had encounters with. And I started connecting a lot to her. And every time I would tell her to do something, she had these very big yeses, like, yes, I can do this. And she had these very big no's of like insecurity. And for instance, she was really good at making like big amounts of food because that's what they did where she came from. But then to come and like work with pastries or delicacy, yeah, she was just too rough. You know, she couldn't do it. And she would just be, don't give this to me. And every time she would resist, I would be like, you have to learn it. Yeah, but I'm scared I will fail. And I'm like, it's okay, you fail, we do it again. That's not a problem. And so I worked with her on don't tell me, I don't know. Learn. You know, if you don't know, learn. If you don't know, ask. And with time, she started getting more confidence in pastries. And every time she would do something, she would tell me like, I did it. I'm like, you see, you can do everything. You just have to try. And that for me is very, very powerful. Mm-hmm. But also one of the other chefs, Leah, she was one of the teachers and she has this sort of authority personality in her because she was a teacher. So she has this persona in her. So I said, I want to put her as the team lead because I need to give her where she belongs. I need to put her, you know. And it was really funny. They were having, she was leading, so I was not interacting directly with all the team. So if there was a catering, I would talk to her and she would talk to the team. And I didn't question what she did with the team, because if I can lead, I didn't want to micromanage, otherwise it would be complicated.
Yeah.
But there were moments where she was playing this big boss, bossy boss, you know, and there would be clashes. And there was a very big part of me that wanted to fix the situation, but then also fix her, like, yeah, this is not a black or white thing. You have to be more diplomatic. And I started to do it, but I started clashing with her because I started putting ego on ego, and that was not a good idea, or taking things personally. And then when I started meeting her where she was, I really telling her, yeah, but yeah, you can do it like it's softer, say things a bit nicer. And so we worked on how she can manage in a more soft dynamic that still had her power, but it was more less resistance in that sense. And I could feel it, you know, every time I would talk to one of the chefs, she knows everything. So they gave her this kind of, you know, pedestal thing, which I'm not a big fan of, you know, but I understand I cannot fix everything. Mm. But I also created this family feel, a family vibe in the team, which made me very proud, because we have this hidden competitive instinct in all of us as humans, but in the Middle East we can be a bit envious and a little bit like jealous, and especially with women, you know, especially with cooking.
Is that only in the Middle East?
So with cooking also, like, so I remember the first encounter where they had to cook, and so I was still giving them single orders to all of them, and I told Ahlam, you know, yesterday you cooked this, today you cook that, and she was like, why are you changing the dish? Did I do anything bad, or is she better at me? And then I said, oh, no, we need to talk about this. This is very important. We all cook the same dishes, and there's no one cooking better than the other. Yeah, some of us cook this better than that, but we're all one here. And that took some time to sink in. Mm. But now when I see them, they're all friends now. Even if we're not, they all became this family. Snitted family, and that for me is the biggest problem.
Will they continue working after you stop with From Syria with Love?
Well, the thing, the limiting thing is, and that's something out of my control, is they were all under the OSIM way. So they all had their leave loan.
Yep.
Because I couldn't staff everyone fully. So I'm afraid a lot of them won't continue because they already have an income. What I gave them was just extra.
What would you suggest employers to do differently with respect to hiring and giving chances to women with migrant backgrounds?
Actually, the one thing I realized ever since I came to Belgium 8 years ago is they always used language as an excuse for not being like accepted in a job, and which I find sometimes quite limiting and a bit narrow-minded, because not all jobs need the language. You know, some jobs you can manage without. Yeah. But I always feel like you need a prerequisite in this. And I hear that a lot in these women, or even the men, like learning the Dutch language is not easy. You know, it's easy for a 25-year-old guy, but for a 45-year-old woman, some who have never been to school, yeah, good luck with that. I mean, now we're doing a podcast. I shouldn't be doing it in Dutch. I understand 95% Dutch, but I never invested my time in learning the language. I invested my time in doing other things. But if I kept it as this limiting, then I wouldn't have continued.
So language barrier.
I think coaching, but really from the perspective of people who come from the same background. You know, coaching on the business aspect, but realistic coaching. You know, if realistic meaning, meet them where they are again. If someone wants to do a project and we say, yeah, you have to do a business canvas, and then, yeah, you teach them what it is, but it might take them a bit longer than someone else, and maybe they'll do this. So coaching and mentoring, this one-to-one, I feel there's a lot of power in that. And I think a lot of organizations do that, you know, like Starters Labo. They really connect you to people who are from your same background. And I think they're just...
You have experience yourself with Starters Labo?
No, I heard about them and I applied for a job once as a coach, and they didn't take me for the language.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Which I understand and I'm a bit pissed off about, but I get it. Maybe I was not meant to be there, but coaching in the sense one-to-one, but I think it's this having this mentor that you look up to, someone who's already been in the country for a few years longer than you, that you feel like, yeah, I want to be like him, you know, he gets me. I can relate. That's very important, the word relating.
Yep.
But the coaching, I mean, coaching not on the business coaching, but more life coaching.
Yeah.
Like, that's the part where you have the limiting beliefs and the beliefs of saying, like, I can't do this. Okay, why? Why can't you do this? So working with the limitations, actually.
A lot of employers, they say, I would love to hire them, but I'm not reaching them, or I don't know, I don't find them.
Mm. Is that the truth, though? Yeah, they say that to you? They can't find them. There's a lot of them, but I think a lot of them are also hiding, probably. Mm. But that's a good question. But I really see as this is not the job of the employer, actually. I think this is more the job of the integration in the country. Starts a bit earlier than you applying for a job.
Mm-hmm.
It starts a bit more with what they call the emborgering. And, and I heard about the courses of the emborgering. There are some sometimes quite basic. And maybe there should be more of an advanced emborgering, like, you know, emborgering in the sense of not just relate to the others around you, but go and connect to yourself, you know? And this sounds very big, but I think a lot of people need that.
I can imagine that's the type of life coaching we have to give everybody.
Definitely, but okay. But I mean, especially the migrants that come, okay, they need, like, how do I say it? It's really this ground. Like, if you come here and you're new and your feet are not on the ground, nothing works for you.
How long are you here?
8 years. But I come from a background where I was pushed as a woman to achieve. I was not dimmed, you know? So I already had my warrior behind me, my mom pushing me, my father also.
They're also here?
They live in Spain now.
Okay.
And so I always had that support, but I'm not the most common. Okay, there are.
That's clear for me.
Yeah, but this kind of backbone, the support, they don't have it. They never had it. And that's why I started from Syria with Love, actually. I was standing at the station in Antwerp Nord, no, sorry, Brussels Nord, you know, where the center is, and they apply for asylum. And the constant dialogue I was hearing is, did you get your papers? Where are you settled? You know, they're all talking about basic needs, you know? Basic needs, let's eat, let's sleep. And this takes energy. Another dialogue. Yeah, the all same way. They're up my ass. They want me to work. They want me to study. They don't feel like they're understood, which I understand. You know, it's nobody's fault. It's a huge system also. Like, we can't come and fiddle with the system.
Yeah, but then you say there is some work to do, some very valuable work in the inburgerings trajectories.
Oh, my God. But do you know anything about these courses? Some of them are.
No.
What could you do? How do you book a train on the?
That's. I can imagine that it's very basic.
But also,
how nice would it be if you would be able to lift that up one or two levels?
I already have goosebumps. I'm already part of it. This is where it should start. I mean, I went through the whole trajectory of being a refugee. I went into the camp and I went through the whole process. And I said to myself, emborgering should start in the camp. Because they have nothing to do, nothing. So, but there's really nothing, you know? The food is not even good, so there's nothing to even enjoy in these camps. Get them there. You know, you have them. They're all in this one space. Get them to work, whatever it is. Yeah, I remember when I was there, I was in one of the camps, St. Ruden. The food, yeah, I'm not going to talk about the food that's cut out of the plastic bags and put in. And then I thought to myself, why don't they hire the people that there to cook? And then one time I asked that question and they're like, yeah, regulations, safety. And I'm like, oh, here we go again. it's the bureaucracy that also limits, you know, and sometimes it's just so frustrating. And it's beautiful. You guys are very structured and it's right, nice, but leave some space to just be.
No.
And I feel it. I feel this tension, this underlying tension and this frustration. And Belgians, by their nature, are very composed human beings. They don't show the anger and they're more a bit, you know. And this can be very dangerous, you know, because sometimes when they snap, yeah, I cannot blame them because it's, again, tamed. And I saw it actually, like, funny side story. I was in the spa last week and...
In the
sauna.
Okay. Yeah.
And I slipped and I fell on my back.
Mm.
And yeah, it's not a nice place to fall on your back in the slippery water. And I have back issues. So I was like, the first thing is like, shit, that's the last thing I need right now. So I get up like, or I just look around and... I swear you're not, everyone is just still. Nobody reacted, nobody moved. Everyone was like almost freezing. And I was like, okay, maybe I should get up now and pretend as if nothing happened, because apparently nothing happened. And I was just like, I moved. And then just a woman came and she's like, alles goed? I'm like, yeah, alles is perfect actually. What are we talking about? What's the problem here? And I felt so... not seen, so unsupported at that moment. And I'm like, at the first comment was like, what are these cold-blooded people? I was quite judgmental, but I was quite shocked at the reaction. And I understand that it's not cold blood. You guys can be the warmest creatures, but it's just also tamed and composed that nobody's themselves anymore. Everyone is playing a role. And you see it, yeah. I mean, I finish all this dilemma and then I go and it's a Saturday, it's past vacancy, everyone is drinking, but with this straight, sober face, everyone's so serious, heavy energy. And I'm like, fuck, what is wrong with people? You should be in the spa, you should be a chill now, but there's so much unseen tension. And when you become very connected to yourself, you can read this energy, you can sense it. And I'm like, so I was with a friend and she's Belgian, and I'm like, what's this energy? She's like, just protect yourself and don't let it block you. And I'm like, but I feel it. I cannot help it, you know? And I went back home and I was just processing everything. And I said one word and I said, probably I was this kind of effect, this cold effect that I got was probably the way was mirroring what's happening inside of me and how I treat myself. Because if I was a bit more slow, or I showed a bit more emotion, or I said, ow, I didn't even say anything. I just got up and pretended as nothing happened. And so they did the same.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, maybe it was my fault. I was the one who was with the, yeah, pretend as if nothing happened and that, you know. And I was like, it's so sad how we're all doing this.
It feels as if we can continue
for
hours, but we're making your task more difficult.
It's good. I will be very inspired editing this podcast.
Because we would like always to keep it more or less in half an hour.
Then she would have sailed. It's a challenge for you, Ebert. What kind of closing question can you pose to find a closing in this conversation that can, of course, go on, because we need 3 more hours.
Well... Anyway, usually I ask you to...
I was the faster.
Yeah.
No, I have maybe a closing remark. Recently I learned there is more diversity within one group than between groups. Mm. Is this something that rings true to you? Because you have been working with a lot of people. Do you see this? Can you confirm it, or do you see it differently? But, I mean, there's diversity within us, so that's normal. Eh? I mean, we all have small parts of us. But again, the challenge or the way that you find it is making sure that everyone is being themselves, which is not always the case. Half of us hide ourselves or our true selves. And you also, with growing age and work, you start discovering also new pieces of yourself. Like me, I'm 34 now. There are pieces in me where I'm like, who is this person? But it's in me, but it was just, again, hidden and dusty.
So diversity is definitely within us as humans, as one person, as a family, but we need space to accept it.
Yeah, and this means when as a company or as an employer, you're doing your work on inclusion well, it doesn't mean you need to attract lots of new people, because the diversity that's there, that's present, will be seen.
Why not? It's just shedding a light on it and giving it a safe space to be seen.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Je luisterde naar Let's Talk, de podcast waarin we de dialoog voeden rond inclusie op de arbeidsmarkt, impactvolle initiatieven onder de aandacht brengen en minder gehoorde stemmen aan het woord laten. Was je geboeid? Zette dit gesprekje aan het denken? Ben je zelf graag één van onze volgende gasten? Laat het ons weten, volg ons op social media en abonneer je zeker op deze podcastreeks.